here. If anybody wants to come in the front, if you're not able to see clearly, it's up to you. If you're sort of trapped behind. Yes, let's begin with a little meditation today, as usual. Attention inwards. Experience my entire existence concentrating. This body, my costume. This life, a role I play. And I, the eternal spirit, am the actor. The eternal.
I sparkle. A being of light. And I see myself beyond this world of matter. In the dimension of light. In a world of light. Beyond space, beyond time. I see myself in the presence of God. Another being of light. Sparkling down upon me. Rays of peace, rays of love. And I, the eternal spirit, am bathing in this light. Healing. Purifying. Letting this light enter the very depths of my being. Lost in silence. Swimming in the waves of peace. The eyes of the mind focused on this experience of union. Union between the soul and the supreme. Two sparkling beings of light. Lost. In communion. I feel the power of silence surging through me. Light, holding on to my connection with the Supreme, I allow my awareness to return back to this world of matter, back to this room, back to this body, this costume of mine. And once again I take my place in the center of the brain, spreading the rays of light, the rays of life, throughout this brain and body, giving consciousness to this brain, life to this body. looking out through the windows of these eyes, listening through these ears. I, the Eternal Spirit, silent, peaceful, at peace with myself, at peace with the world.
Chairs here for those who are trapped at the back. You can also pick up some chairs and maybe place them somewhere here if you want. There are some chairs on that side, also behind. The topic for today is self-determination, the pathway to happiness. I was trying to find out how do we translate self-determination to Danish. How do we translate self-determination to Danish? Can we have an expression for that? Yes?
Selvindsigt.
Selvindsigt? But that's insight, isn't it? Insight is insight. Selvbestemmelse. Still, that's to decide, right?
Beslutsam,
that is decisive. No. What we mean is, you can find out, maybe later on you might be able to come up with an expression. The meaning is, whatever act I perform is determined by the self. Determined by the self. It is determined by the self. So today we will try and explore what we mean by this determination. One is determination. We speak of determination as a quality, right? Some people are more determined. They take a course of action, they follow through. They decide something, they follow through. So you call them determined. They plan something and they make sure they finish it. So they have a determination. That's not the kind of determination we are speaking about. We are speaking about, we'll speak about what we'll speak about, and then you can decide for yourself. This is not that kind of determined or determination we are speaking about. We are saying that the actions that we engage in come from, are controlled, are decided, not by the world inside my head. One is the world outside me. The other is the world inside my head. The world from outside that I have taken inside my head, which I call mine. That world. And it's very difficult to differentiate between this world that I have taken from the outside into me and I call my world, and my true inner world. And there is a big difference. And we will try and clarify that difference today. Very interestingly, It's a very hot topic in psychology now, self-determination. It's a very hot topic. It's one of the latest areas of research. A lot of research is being done in this area, self-determination. And its connection to happiness, its connection to well-being, its connection to performance. What kind of, basically the question that people are asking is, what kind of motives, what kind of motivation helps human beings in obtaining happiness and well-being? What kind of motivation helps human beings experience true self-esteem? What kind of motivation helps human beings perform at their very best? What kind of motivation is that? That is the fundamental question that is being asked. And so a lot of research around self-determination is around encouraging and practicing that kind of motivation that is required for our happiness and well-being, but also for our performance, for our health. There are lots of very serious implications. We say this century is the century of stress. Everybody gets stressed. I have a couple of colleagues at work who are on leave because of stress. Stress leave. No, we work. People work so hard, they get stressed and they cannot work. And they are so good, very competent people. They do their work so well. And I see them there on stress leave. And other people are not good enough to fill in their role. You see? So people who benefit from their role are unable to benefit because they've gone down with stress. So what creates stress? Can we look at motivation and can we look at transforming our motivation to be released from stress? We will speak about some of these. These are deep issues. We will speak about some of them today. Self-determination, the pathway to happiness. What is self-determination? Now let's begin with a simple question. I will ask you all to think about some activity that is important for you that you are engaged with. It could be work, it could be taking care of your children, it could be, you know, I don't know, anything. Whatever activity that you feel right now in your life is very important for you. It could be connected to work, your social life, your family life, your recreational life, whatever life. Think of some activity that is important for you.
Only one.
Let's begin with one. Let's try and make it easy for ourselves. Let's begin with one activity. And then the question that I would ask you is, when you have thought of this activity, why are you engaged in this activity? What are your motives? Why do you want to do this? Whatever it is, performing at the workplace, taking care of your kids, cleaning your apartment. Whatever it is, whichever activity it is, cleaning your bathroom. For example, you haven't done it for maybe a few weeks and you're thinking, now it's time, I really did it. Yeah. So whatever it is, whichever activity that you feel right now is taking up the space of your mind, why do you want to do it? What is it that you will experience if you accomplish that? Why do you want to do it? What is your motive? Spend a few seconds on this. It would be very useful if you could actually think of an activity that you're having some difficulties with, some resistance. You realize it's very important for you. You want to do it, but somehow you feel a sense of resistance. Some resistance. You're unable to do it as well as you could do it, or you're unable to begin doing it, or some resistance you experience. At the same time, you recognize it's important. Why do you want to do it? Yes. Would you like to share why is it that you would like to engage in this activity? You don't have to share the activity. Just why? What do you hope to get out of it?
Happiness.
Happiness.
Love.
Success.
Peace.
Success.
Peace.
Peace. Let's look at all these things.
Freedom.
Freedom, wow. So we are looking at many things here. Happiness, love, peace, freedom. What else?
Money.
Oh my God.
Yeah, why not? We need it. We need to pay our bills, right? Sense of purpose? a sense of purpose and meaning. What else? Yes?
Possibility.
That will open up new possibilities. Why would you like to have new possibilities?
Because it gives me satisfaction.
A sense of satisfaction. Okay. And of course then, wow, you would also break it down. What is it about it that gives you satisfaction? But that's okay. Anyone else?
Well-being.
You want to feel good? What do you mean by well-being? How do you want to define it?
Satiates like a hunger inside me.
It satiates a hunger. That's a beautiful expression. It satiates, it satisfies a hunger inside me.
I can last that one.
It satisfies a hunger inside me. Let's put it here.
Can I have it? Thank you.
What is this hunger that it satisfies? It's the hunger of the soul. What is the hunger for? Is it for chocolate? Is it for whipped cream? Is it? What is the hunger for?
Love.
Okay. Satisfies hunger. Or you could say it satisfies some need, right?
Yeah.
Could it be, for example, the experience of self-esteem? Would that be true for some of us?
Yes.
The experience that is self-esteem. So I accomplish something and I achieve something and I experience self-esteem through that. Can you say that? We call it contingent self-esteem. Our self-esteem is sort of dependent on getting something done. And to get something done, I feel good.
No.
Yes?
No.
Not for you.
No.
For some people?
Yeah.
Yes? So we speak about contingent yes, anything else?
Yeah, avoid problems.
To avoid problems. Anything else? Yes?
Self-expression.
Self-expression. What do you mean by self-expression?
It's like expressing your true self.
What is your true self? What do you want to express?
Probably that is... finding
out
the way by doing.
Okay. All right. Some self-expression, let's say. Let's put it here. Anything else? Yes?
Duty.
A sense of duty. A sense of duty. Okay. That's a very interesting thing. I will put it both here. And I will also put it here. And why, I will tell you later. It's a secret. Okay. Yes?
To avoid pain and diseases?
Avoid pain, avoid problems, avoid pain. Yes, somebody else had that. And yes?
Understanding, to feel understood.
To be understood by someone is what you're saying? Be understood. So some sort of being understood. Someone else was saying something, yes?
Giving to others.
Giving to others, okay. What would you like to give?
Understanding, healing. Help. Yeah.
I will put it also in both places and then I will explain later. Giving, whatever it is that you want to give to others. Anything else? Yes?
Go beyond your limits.
Go beyond limits. No limits. There was a Dutch pop band many years ago called Too Unlimited, and they had a very nice song called No Limits. This took my favorite song in the early 90s. Break all limits. No limits. Freedom?
Challenge yourself and maybe it's...
What do you feel when you accomplish that challenge?
Yes, similar to satisfaction. But
okay.
It's also something that you
But there is a sense of challenge involved?
Yes.
And you're sort of going beyond limits, you're accomplishing something, yes? Yes?
Personal development?
What do you mean by personal development?
By overcoming challenges, you can either learn something academically or spiritually or emotionally.
Some sense of development. Okay. So there is a sense of development. Anything else? Yes?
You wrote down self-esteem, but I was thinking, do you mean self-esteem or self-worth?
Yeah, now, for today, we will use them both as synonymous.
Okay.
For the moment. For the moment. But you're right. But the thing is, now, some people will use self-esteem as self-worth, and some will use self-worth as self-esteem. But you're right, there some people differentiate between these two. Today, we are speaking about contingent self-esteem. The kind of self-esteem that we experience when we get something done, when we accomplish something. So it means self-esteem is dependent on the accomplishment of some activity. Or something that I achieved through that.
Okay.
And we'll speak about something else. But do you have something in mind specifically?
No, not really. I just think they're two very different things.
And how would you explain the difference?
A sense of self-worth comes from a very different place than a sense of self-esteem. A sense of self-esteem comes from your ability, in my world at least, of being sufficient, being competent and not worrying about whether you're good enough.
Okay. And self-worth?
It's probably more of an inner feeling of your own worth, often in terms of comparing your own worth to other people. So,
That's how. Yeah, but the thing is, see, the problem with words is people use them in different ways. So you would define self-worth in this way and self-esteem in this way. There are others who would define it the other way around. So that's, you know, not getting into that, but you're right. We are speaking about two different experiences. One is this experience of competence, sort of getting things done. And the other, you said, is sort of a generalized experience of worth. Which is connect, maybe you compare it with others. You're speaking of these two different experiences.
I think often what I was thinking about is often that one seeks a sense of self-worth through doing something, which I find myself is not particularly healthy because it should come from something else and the feeling of who you are.
You're touching, but some people would define self-esteem in the same way. So let's, without getting into that, there is this experience of sort of getting something done and comparing with others and feeling good about the self. So we speak about some sort of a... So one is contingent self-esteem, that is, I get something done and so I feel good about myself. The other is this process of comparing with others that you spoke about, and the self-esteem that comes from some comparing with others. That's the other thing. Anything else before we move on?
Entertainment.
Yeah, okay. We will, of course, put it here as a sense of enjoyment or entertainment. We can also put it here. Anything else, yes?
Meaning.
Sense of meaning, yeah, purpose, meaning. Yeah? Sorry?
Joy,
sense of joy, enjoyment, yes. Now, we'll never end now. Yes, but finally, yes.
You mentioned admiration from other people.
Admiration from other people, sense of being understood. We also have admiration, recognition, some sort of recognition or admiration from others. Enrique?
Some sense of care.
Care, being cared for.
Being able to care for yourself.
Okay. A sense of care, perhaps connected to the experience of love. We can keep adding to this. Yes, okay, finally.
The last one?
Yeah.
To feel whole.
To feel whole. To feel whole, complete. Okay. To feel whole and complete. We can add many more things now. This is a very interesting continuum that has actually been discovered in recent times. I'll tell you how it all started. It started with one research that was conducted by Edward Deci. He's a professor at the University of Rochester in the US. And that was very counterintuitive. It completely put the thinking of motivation on its head. And what he wasn't really thinking that he would discover something like that, but he discovered it. It was serendipitous. He just discovered it. He said, oh, what's this? And then he sort of conducted some experiments, and then it sort of got proven again and again. And this was very interesting. What he discovered was, this is, you know, organizational psychology, you know, but it has a very deep significance. If you give someone a reward for something that is intrinsically motivating, if you give someone a reward for performing an activity that is intrinsically motivating, the person is doing it out of a sense of enjoyment, right? And you give the person a sort of a reward, say, maybe money. You give the person a reward. The motivation of that person will go down or go up? It should go up, right? It actually goes down. So how can that be? I mean, we all think we should be paid for something we love doing. Then he found out when people start getting paid for something they really love doing, their motivation goes down.
Are we talking about paid for or awards, say?
They started with money.
Okay, okay.
And then they looked at various things. So I will tell you about all the things that they looked at in time. So they started with money. So for example, an extrinsic reward, which is tangible. Tangible is something you can see and hold and... Like money, right? So when that is given for performing an act that is intrinsically motivating, the person's motivation goes down. Why does that happen? Why does that happen?
Yeah, we don't know.
Some people apparently don't, Linda.
Because you know you will get it, so you lose the motivation.
Because you know you will get it, and so you lose the motivation, yes?
Because it becomes an outer thing instead of an inner.
So what happens there?
You lose your focus. Your focus.
You're right. Your focus is there. And as my focus goes there, what happens?
I lose my connection to my inner.
I lose my sense of control. I'm being controlled by something outside me. Earlier when I was enjoying it, I was being controlled by my own inherent intrinsic sense of joy. I love doing it. Right? And now when I'm not doing it, I'm doing it, then I get rewarded for it. Okay, why am I doing this? Oh, I'm getting rewards for it. Okay, my attention is now shifted. My attention has shifted from my enjoyment and my intrinsic, you know, joy to something out there. Whoa, okay, I'm getting that. That looks good.
Yeah.
Then I want that. Then I want to control that. And I can't control that. Because others are controlling it. Right? And so my attention shifts, I lose my sense of control. And then I want to control it, and that creates stress. And if this goes on for a long period of time unchecked, it can lead to stress and burnout. This dynamic of this shift. So we speak about beginning from something like external control, where my behavior is being controlled by something outside me, like money, or some things like I avoid problems if I engage in that behavior. I avoid pain, something based on that. I am understood by someone. I get some admiration or some sort of recognition from others. External things. And then on the other hand, we have something called internal, or you could say internal control, or whatever you want to use, whatever word you want to use. But basically, the extrinsic motivation and the intrinsic motivation. So this was the beginning of that theory. And then they found something very interesting. When money was given, motivation went down. Right? But when they got praise, motivation did not go down. Praise. Say, praise. What else?
Hose.
Okay. So when people were praised, not like, you know, a big thing like being praised in front of others, but just a friendly pat on the back or some acknowledgement, which was not something tangible, motivation did not go down. So first, Deci discovered that you give money, tangible rewards, motivation goes down. People stop enjoying that. And then when they get some sort of a human connection, motivation does not go down. What is that happening? So that led to further research. And so this shift between intrinsic and extrinsic motivation, so we are looking at being driven from the sense of the self, our own intrinsic values, like love, peace and freedom, self-expression. You're expressing yourself. You're doing something because that's an expression of who you are. You are enjoying it, you're giving, you're caring, whatever it is, you're doing it there. And then you start sort of getting rewarded for it, and then that becomes a problem. And this has been then replicated over a number of studies by a number of researchers, that when people are really enjoying their activity, when they start getting tangible rewards for it, generally speaking, motivation goes down, performance goes down, and over a period of time, they develop stress and burnout. Then there was a Swiss economist, Bruno Frey. He sort of furthered this study and he found something very interesting. He said that when you give people money for doing some activity, it is true, motivation may go down, but in some cases he discovered motivation goes up. So then he started finding out, what is this happening? Till now we've been thinking of motivation goes up and people are getting money. And then he investigated why that was happening and he found something very interesting. He found that it's not just the rewards in themselves, it's also the perception of the individual who's getting the reward. So for example, in a company, people are given a reward for performing some action. If the people believe this reward is being given to control me, motivation goes down. Mm-hmm. Not belief, like, you know, it's a sort of an association in the mind, a sort of an assumption that, oh, I have to perform better because then I will get more of this reward, you know, something like that. That is a sense of control. If they believe that this reward is just a sign of my own skills and my competence and my abilities, motivation does not go down, it goes up. So this is another addition to that. The way I am processing the reward that is being given to me, but most people may not process it in that way. So here we have a process of awareness and a conscious, deliberate evaluation of what I am getting, why I am doing it. And so here, instead of being controlled by that reward that I am getting, I am obtaining control over the reward by consciously evaluating and connecting this reward to my own inner sense of self, who I am, what are my skills. Now, this is something I see a lot. I worked with a couple of people coaching, you know, performance, not performance as in I don't know how to play tennis so well, I can hit a ball, but it goes somewhere. But I remember one tennis player many years ago. She was a very talented, playing international level, sub-junior, junior level, very, very talented. And then a time came when she could not even look at the tennis racket. She would actually feel like vomiting physically, nauseated when she would look at a tennis racket. And she's so talented. She stopped there. She got out of the sub-junior, and then she was in the junior league, she got out of that. Otherwise, she could have been an international player at a very high international level. She completely got out. She stopped and she shifted. She never went back to tennis. And working, of course, I met her many years later when she had stopped and she had gone on. She was doing management and all that. And she was quite successful. But, you know, going back to her story is very, very interesting. That's true. What do you think happened? But where did that pressure come from? Where from?
External control.
And how is that external control operating? She's first playing tennis because she loves playing. She loves playing, you know, it's a natural expression. She has certain skills, she has certain abilities, she's using them, and because she loves them and she has the competence, she's doing very well.
She starts winning, and she has to win again and win again and win again.
Not just that, others are now looking at her, right?
And expect her to win.
Now she's getting all these awards and rewards, and she's in the newspapers and she's on television. Oh, child prodigy, right? The next great Martina Navratilova. And all these pressures coming upon her. And after some time, now she's getting all, why am I playing? I'm playing because I love it. Now why am I playing? I'm playing because I'm getting all these things. The attention is going up. I'm losing control. And then I want to control all these things. I can't control all these things. The pressure builds up, and then there is a collapse. Yes.
It's the same as these restaurants, who has the Michelin restaurant. Some of the owners goes down with stress because the pressure is too high. Because next year they expect to have the same Michelin or one more.
Yeah.
So a lot of those guys.
So these rewards in these experiences, it really shifts. So I begin doing it because I love it. And because I love it and I'm good at it, I start doing well and then I get rewarded for it. The moment I start getting rewarded, there can be a shift. In some cases, there is not a shift. But this is that inner process of evaluation. So then Edward Deci sort of developed the theory furthermore, and he looked at a continuum moving from external control to internal control. So he says one is getting external rewards, and the other is, in the process of growing up, I have been rewarded and punished for many things, right? And I have been rewarded mainly by my parents or caregivers, and I feel secure when I am with them, so to please them, I want to do the things that they like, they want me to do. And so what happens in this process, we speak about the process of introjection. We've spoken about it before, where I take in the reward systems of the world outside into me, and I call them mine. The cultural values, they are instilled in this way. I take them in. Family values, for example, many of them, I take them in because I have been rewarded for them. Not necessarily monetary reward, but the love and the affection of my parents and caregivers, their embrace, their hug, the look of kindness on their face when they look at me when I do something that they think is nice, and the look of, you know, anger or irritation or annoyance on their face when I do something they consider is not right. So I take this in. And then I have internalized these punishments, or the rewards and punishments, I have internalized them, and then they become the source of my self-esteem. And this is what we speak about as contingent self-esteem. My self-esteem then is dependent on proving to myself that I am that. I am that. And very often this leads to a hunger that we spoke about. There is a hunger. And hunger comes from a space of there is something lacking, right? There is a hunger. I want to satisfy that hunger. How do I satisfy the hunger? Depending on the standards of the world I have taken into my head, I've forgotten those experiences, but I've taken in the standards, I've internalized them. I want to keep living my life according to those standards, because when I And so, but these standards can also be internal. They can also be internal, but they can also be introjected. And this is very tricky. Because how do we differentiate between that which is truly internal and that which is merely introjected? I believe it is internal, but it is not internal. It is not really internal. How do I make out the difference? How do I discern?
The authenticity.
How do I find that out? How do I find that out? That I am being driven really by my inner sense of self, or I am being driven by the sense of self that has been created because of rewards and punishment. So I am doing it internally. It's my inner self. But there is a big difference. And the big difference, yes, you were saying something. Yeah, we will come to that a little later. Yeah, but what? How do? Yeah, right. We need to be aware and conscious. But how do I differentiate whether it is coming from here or it is coming from here? You're right. We spoke about this process. We speak about this as identification. This is the process where I actually look at, and then I'll just put it up here. This is called integration, and I will explain what I mean by all these things. Someone was saying yes.
I'm not quite sure what you mean about the difference between.
Exactly, it's very tough. It's very tough. It's the most, probably the toughest thing in the world to find out whether I am being driven by my inner sense of self or I am being driven by my introjected self. And the difference, yes.
If I can stay calm.
Yes, I think that's a very important thing. If I am being driven by my introjected sense of self, there will be a compulsion, there will be a sense of guilt, and that guilt is driving me.
That's introjection.
So there is a sense of guilt, first of all. So many of my actions can be driven out of a sense of guilt. And so when I engage in the action, I sort of feel I'm free from guilt. The other is, and so there contingent self-esteem, which is basically in this way we speak about it as an ego kick. My ego gets a kick when I accomplish something. I feel good about myself.
And that could be that I'm not good enough. That's why I do things like that.
Be precise.
I don't want to say that word. Who said that?
Exactly.
Yeah, I know. Okay.
No, so that's the thing, because now where is the sense of I'm not good enough and therefore I have to do this to feel good about myself, where is it coming from? And again, we say in the process of growing up, as I display certain behaviors, I learn from the world around me that if I display those behaviors in this group, in this society, that's not good enough. I take that in. And then I'm controlled by that sense of what is right and what is wrong. Now, that sense of what is right and what is wrong could actually be connected very clearly to my values. But I'm not being controlled by this, I'm being controlled by this. And this difference can be understood, of course, through the process of expanding our awareness, which is the purpose of meditation, of course. You were saying something before I went on?
Yeah, because when I said, you know, the satiation of the hunger of my soul, that was not the introductory one. Because the way that I felt what I do is the original question that you asked. It's about satisfying. It's that calmness. Satisfying that calmness.
Yeah. I understand. There are also inner needs. So that's why I didn't know. I wrote down hunger here. I wrote down needs here. Inner. Did I write down needs? I didn't. Let me write them down here. So we are speaking about intrinsic needs, which of course need to be satisfied. But there is no craving here.
No.
The craving, it comes from the space of emptiness. And then I sort of engage. And so I do something, and here very easily I can say, it's my duty. But that duty is coming from a sense of guilt. It's my duty to take care of my parents. Yes, of course, it's my duty to take care of my parents. But where is that duty, sense of duty coming from? Is it coming from a compulsion? And we know compulsion is a sign of anxiety. We know that. Obsession, compulsion. Is there an obsession? Is there a compulsion? And these are signs of anxiety, which means, and anxiety itself means there are some deep underlying issues that are not resolved. And this is introjected regulation. Now, a lot of our understanding of stress has been enriched by this understanding, because stress is coming from this process of trying to achieve, so that I can feel good about myself. Because deep inside, I'm not feeling so good about myself for various reasons. One is I have gone against my own values, my inner values of the soul that we speak about. There could be other reasons where I have gone against the values of others around me, and for that I have been punished, or I have perceived punishment, and I have taken it within me, and I feel low about myself, and I want to compensate. And I can feel good here too. When I accomplish, I feel great. But that great is a sort of a kick that you get when you take a drug. You feel good. You know, it's so good. This excitement. The feeling good here, there is no excitement here. And that is the difference. You spoke about the sense of peace. That is the difference. Here I perform my duty. I overcome challenges. There is a sense of meaning. There is a sense of quietude. There is a sense of serenity. Because you are with the self, there is no excitement there. This is how we can try and discern, and this process of awareness and conscious evaluation. So, generally speaking, the research now has become quite strong on this, and it says we have this continuum moving from here to here. Now, whatever I am doing, where is it coming from? Is it coming from the space of introjection or external control? Or have I gone through the process of consciously evaluating, being aware of what I am doing? And I have connected it to my inner sense of values and my intrinsic needs, and through this I experience a sense of meaning. So we say there are lots of things we are not born with, right? We learn to do them. Many things we learn. I mean, what are we born with, really? There's no role we have when we are born. We don't come out born as psychologists or sociologists or doctors or whatever it is. These are things we learn. So how is it then, when these are things I learn, that is, I'm taking them from the external environment, how do I make them intrinsic? How do I make them intrinsic? Because they are not intrinsic. I'm taking them in from the world.
They become automatic. They play over and over again.
Yeah, they play over and over again, and sometimes they can consume us if we are working from the space of introjection. So the challenge then is all these things I learn to do, all these things I have to do, taking care of my kids, doing my job well, you know, cleaning my house, all these activities I'm engaged with, how do I make them come from my inner sense of self? How do I ensure that? You have any thoughts?
By feeling.
By feeling what?
Yeah.
By feeling what?
If you have a lot of options, you know a lot of things, you pick the one.
You pick the one. But how do I ensure that that becomes something that I engage with on my terms, not on the terms of the world outside me?
When you do it for yourself and not...
When I do it for myself, and this is the process of connecting, identification, awareness, connecting it with my inner sense of self. So whatever I'm doing... See, people take up a choice of career. Sometimes they work with career choice. People take up a choice of career, right? So, say for example, someone wants to be a doctor, wants to be a medical doctor. Why do they want to be a medical doctor? Is it because through that they will get admiration from the world, they will avoid some problems, they will get lots of money? Of course, that all can happen and that's fine. Or is it because the inner sense of self that I have developed through the process of growing up tells me that if, you know, my parents sort of rewarded me for engaging in certain behaviors of kindness, and I believe that to be, it's a nice way of being kind for the rest of my life, but the reason why I want to be kind and help others is because when I do that, I get an ego kick, I feel good about myself. I have not internalized, then it can become a major source of stress because I'm working from a projected space. It is not me. Then I make the conscious effort. I say, okay, so this is what I want to do. And I may have been inspired to do it, say, from my father because he was a very good doctor and I also want to be a doctor like him. And that's okay. But is it connected to my values? How is it connected to my values? How is it connected to my inner sense of self? I make a process of consciously evaluating that act. I make a conscious, deliberate, I engage in a conscious and deliberate process of connecting that act with my inner sense of self, and through that I experience a sense of purpose and satisfaction and meaning. So this is the process of integration. I am integrating a behavior. I was not born with that behavior, but I'm integrating it into my sense of self. There is a synthesis. Here there is a synthesis with my sense of self. Synthesis with my values, synthesis with my inner self. And then the action is flowing from the space of the self. And this is what we speak about as self-determination. And so if you look at these two poles, we say on this end, we have what is called control or external control. And on this end, we have what is called autonomy. And research is now telling us autonomy is a fundamental human need. It's a fundamental human need. Autonomy. It is not independence. Please. And I will explain. It's a very interesting understanding. So when we speak about experience of happiness or well-being, whatever we speak about, we can also feel happy this way. Short term. Feel good. You feel great. You feel excited. And there is this other path of happiness. We say, this is deep surface. And I'll give you an example of that. Flight attendants, waiters in restaurants, right? Mm-hmm. Especially flight attendants. They are paid to be nice. They have to be nice to people. Even if the customer in the aircraft has been extremely nasty and rude, they have to smile and they have to be nice. And as a result, many of them experience a lot of stress. The reason is they're feeling something inside and they're expressing something else outside. They call it surface acting. You're feeling an emotion inside and you're expressing something else outside. Outside there is a conflict. And that can be very, very stressful over a period of time. And then we have something called deep acting. I have to express something, but I make the effort of connecting it with my inner sense of self. And that is deep acting, there is empathy. I'm transforming my feeling. So I'm feeling anger, I suppress the anger, and I am very nice. Surface acting. That is violent to the self because I'm going against. I'm working from this space. I'm doing it because I have to do it. Somewhere here I'm working from. The other is, I have to be nice as a part of my job, but deep inside, I am nice. I have the value of love. I can forgive. I can look beyond people's limitations. I can understand the person is being nasty because the person is suffering in pain. Some form of suffering and pain. It's coming from that space. I make the effort of transforming the internal emotion. And then what I express is coming from my sense of self. This is self-determination. And negative experiences in life give us a very good opportunity to actually practice self-determination. The more we practice it, the better we become at it. And the better we become at it, we start experiencing autonomy. Autonomy here means my actions are emerging from my sense of self. They are not coming from regulations from the world outside. They're coming from me. And I make the effort of transforming the motives of my actions, which could be external in the beginning. I make the effort of transforming them, making them a part of myself by connecting them with my inner sense of values. And then I feel autonomy. And it's very different from independence. It's very different from individualism. In fact, there's some very interesting research on this. Earlier when people spoke of autonomy, they spoke of it as independence. I don't rely on others for many things. Dependence, I'm relying on others for some things. I rely on others for support. I rely on others for advice. I rely on others to get some things done. Sort of a dependence or interdependence. Independence, I sort of. Individualism is connected to more independent thinking and doing, right? Collectivism is people are more sort of tight social networks and more dependent on each other for many things, getting things done. I've taught in different countries and I can see when I work with students in groups, working in a place like Denmark, students divide their work and they sort of take care of their, they don't expect the other to do their part of the work. I work in India, students work in groups, they work, they do their own work, but if something goes wrong, they also expect the other to finish their part of the work. Right? Both are effective. By the way, both are effective. Both are fine. Both accomplish very good projects. The problem is, when you have the Dane and the Indian working together. So this Indian guy is expecting the Dane to take care, you know, sort out some of his work. And he said, well, that's not my job, you know. That becomes a problem. But left to themselves, they work perfectly okay. Even in a situation where people are relying on each other a lot more, and in a situation where people are not relying on each other so much, autonomy can be experienced in both situations. And that's a very interesting finding. Autonomy can be experienced in both situations. So for example, I'm working in a collectivistic group where people sort of expect the other to sort of do a part of their job, right, because of many other issues, and there are many reasons for that. I do it. Now, in that society, in that group, I could be working from a sense of fear. If I don't do their part of the job, I might lose their friendship, or I may get punished by my organization, or I could be working from that. I could be working from my inner sense of the cultural values I have been taught when I was growing up. My mother always told me, oh, you should help others, you should take care of their work, they may have difficulties, you should do it. So because of that, I'm doing it. Or I have made the effort of transforming it and I say, yes, my value is love. I would like to give to the world. And if that person has some problems and needs some work to be done, I would like to help out. Because it's coming from my inner sense of self. So I can be autonomous even there. And I cannot be autonomous even there. Let's take the individualistic group. So they are working here. Right? So everybody has to do their own work. This is my understanding. And I sort of, so I say, someone asks me to do that part of the job. Why should I do it? You know, where is that coming from? Is that also coming from my sense of what I have been taught as I was growing up? You should take care of yourself. Others should take care of them. And therefore, I'm following that introjected regulation. Or could be. Or am I working from this deep inner space of the self, where I recognize that others should learn to take care of their responsibilities? And if I make them do, I mean, if I do all these things for them, then they may actually lose their sense of independence, which they need to have to survive in this particular context. Where is it coming from? This is coming from very clear conscious reflection. And very interestingly, in America, researchers compare European Americans and Asian American students on academic performance, and to what extent are they feeling their academic values to be driven from autonomy? You know what they discovered? Very interesting discovery. The Asian American students showed higher autonomy than the European American students. That doesn't make sense. That's a collectivistic culture. It doesn't make sense. Because individualism, collectivism, independence, dependence is a different thing. Autonomy is a totally different thing. So why was that? And then some researchers interpreted that as because the Asian American students have a very strong sense of community in their families. There is relatedness. When they have a strong sense of relatedness, they actually feel secure enough. When they feel secure enough, they can actually be autonomous.
Do you have a word for autonomous?
In English, I mean, that's the word that we have been using. In Danish, I don't know how it... But here, what the meaning? Again, the thing is, these are words. I can use it in one way, someone else can use it another way. What we mean by autonomy here is, the action is driven from my sense of self. There is a sense of will.
But I can easily see that I sometimes do things because of introjection, okay?
Yeah.
And
so I come to the club.
But I do it, and then I think about it, and I think, what the hell, why did you do it? It was because somebody had to say, oh, it's just a nice girl. But I want to go over and do it because I feel like I want to help that person.
Yes.
But I don't know how to switch.
Yeah, you're right. It's a tough thing. And the thing, the understanding here is usually both these motives are mixed up. The reality is the soul carries these values. So that is a part of us. That is who we are. We have the values of love and care, and we would like to give to the world on our own terms. That is a part of us. However, this is also a part of us.
Yeah.
This is something we have taken in. So in reality, in the moment, both these motives are usually mixed up. And how do we separate the two is through this process of conscious evaluation, which is where basically the process of meditation comes in. Because I give time to actually work on the self. And as I engage in that process with time, I learn to make that difference. I learn to discern the power of discernment between these two motives. It takes some time, but it does happen with time. And then I learn to follow the right motive. I say that this action has to be driven from my sense of self. And you know, in every act throughout the day in meditation practice, we observe ourselves, even if I'm cleaning the bathroom, even if I'm cleaning the floor. It could be from a sense of compulsion and guilt or some sort of a compensation. If the room around me is clean, I feel good. As though something inside me has become clean, cleansed. There are deep issues. There are very deep issues. Some people have the obsession with cleanliness, right?
Yes.
Because then the obsession comes from introjection. It's a compensation. When I do that, I feel as though something inside me has been cleansed. But that hasn't been cleansed. For that to be cleansed, I have to pay attention to it. I have to become aware of what that is. And being aware of these values, this takes time, this takes effort. But this is the process of conscious evaluation. When I can make that connection, I experience autonomy. And that autonomy can be experienced. So now there is a lot of research coming out that is saying that autonomy is a universal human need experienced with all cultures. And for human beings to be really happy, to experience high well-being, they have to experience autonomy. They have to experience that their actions are coming from their inner sense of self, not from all these things that have been taken from the world. But interestingly, autonomy has been related to two other needs. The first need is relatedness. Without relatedness, it is very difficult for autonomy to develop. So autonomy is actually not independence at all, because it builds up on relatedness. The next need is competence. So they say there's three basic human needs: relatedness, competence, and then comes autonomy. And a lot of research on this shows children who have secure relations with their parents. So say the parents love them, they feel very, very comfortable, their needs have been satisfied. So when they feel that strong sense of relatedness, they actually explore the world more because they don't have anything to bother about. They know the parents are there. I'm safe. I'm secure. And so they can explore the world more. As they explore the world more, they start finding out what they are good at. As they start finding out what they are good at, they develop their competence. They start performing. Right? And over a period of time, the sense of autonomy, their actions then start coming from their inner sense of self. So they say relatedness becomes a fundamental core need. So as we grow up, we want to experience autonomy. Without strong relatedness, the experiences of strong relatedness, it is difficult for us to experience autonomy. Why? Spiritually, now we've spoken a lot about psychology. Spiritually, the understanding is love is a core need of the soul. And that need of the soul, that value of the soul is expressed and satisfied in relation. And if I am able to have that experience of relatedness that satisfies a very deep inner need of the soul, which gives the soul actually the freedom and liberation and gives the soul the strength to actually be autonomous. Actions then come from a source of the inner sense of self. You were asking something or saying something.
Yeah, I was suggesting that people who come from conflict families or whose parents died or who don't have this kind of support system cannot achieve autonomy or have difficulties. Or
of course they can achieve. Then it's a question of, and there is some also very interesting research. You know, this debate between agency and structure. What determines human action? Agency or structure? Structure? All these things that we have around us, political structures, social structures, all these things, you know, educational structures, but also what we are brought up with, that becomes a structure of my life. Say, for example, if people have not had good parents or they have not had any parents at all, and they've grown up, that's a structure I have grown up in. Agency is my sense of volition, my sense of will. So what determines human behavior? And some research on happiness that has been going on now tells us the experience of well-being, the experience of happiness is determined about 50%. Some studies say 40%, 45 to 55%, something in that range. It is determined, predetermined. Genes, heredity, personality, karma, whatever you want to call it. Spiritually, you would say karma. In science, you would say genes. Basically, something that you are born with, right? How much do you think is determined by our life circumstances? Life circumstances meaning the money I have, the kind of a country I'm living in, the kind of political and social system I'm living in.
That much.
How much? 10%.
Yes.
The other 40 to 50% is actually at our disposal. So that is our sense of agency. The question is, do we use it? If we can use that, we can bring about transformation. And so here when we say, in this process of motivation, we have this experience of resistance. So when we say, we are moving from control to autonomy, we are engaged in the process of internalization. I am internalizing an act that I have to do. I'm making it my own at different levels. Here, superficial level, according to introjected values, I go deeper, I make an aware, a conscious evaluation, I am aware of it. And then through this awareness, I connect it, I integrate this act with my inner sense of self. I have internalized it completely. The more I internalize, the more I work from my inner space, the more I experience autonomy. And now we come to experiences of resistance, experiences of inconsistency. I decide I am going to do this from tomorrow, wake up in the morning and go for a jog, or whatever, work on my research paper for 2 hours every day, or meditate every day for half an hour, or 1 hour, or 2 hours, or 8 hours, whatever, depending on who wants to do how much, right? If we are facing resistance, no, that's an action I have taken up. I was not born with that. I didn't come out of my mother's womb shouting, meditate! I have to meditate. I didn't know anything about meditation, right? So I've learned about meditation. In time, I've learned. It's come from the external world. It didn't come from my some revelation from inside me. Yes, Enrique?
I'm just thinking about this powerful experience of with the dog and having the plate. Like ringing the bell.
Pavlov, conditioning, classical conditioning, yes.
So, like, the brain has to make so many calculations, so we train to bypass. So we see something and then we judge it and we think that that is the
exactly.
Without going in the process.
We don't have the conscious process of evaluation. So now meditation, many times I experience, and in the beginning it used to happen a lot, I used to make a plan. Tomorrow morning I'm going to wake up at 4 o'clock. And I'm going to meditate till 5 o'clock. And then I'm going to go out for a nice long jog. And then I'm going to come back and, 2 days, 3 days, and then you go back to square one. Why does that happen? Where is this resistance coming from? In my understanding, it's time I recognized, because I have not bothered to make that act operate from here. I'm operating either from some superficial whatever, or mostly from the space of introjection. You know, from the space of introjection. I'm trying to use meditation as some sort of a compensatory mechanism. It doesn't work. By the way, meditation is not a compensatory mechanism. Meditation will never help us if I use it as a compensation. Meditation will never help us if I use it with the motivation, with the motivation of forgetting my pain and hurt and all that. Meditation will help us in getting over pain and hurt, but not if my motivation is to get over pain and hurt, because then I'm not meditating. Meditation works to heal pain and hurt when I operate from my inner sense of self, when I operate from the space of love. And this is something I have to make effort for. Does it make sense or is it Latin? It makes sense. It's Latin and it makes sense. That's wonderful. So the process, and then I would feel this resistance and I would realize I haven't done the hard work of connecting the act of meditation with my inner sense of self. I haven't done that work. And so for some days I do it and then I don't do it. And like this, you can use this as a sort of an algorithm for any activity that you're finding resistance with. Cleaning the house, it could be even that, if you're finding a resistance there, sit down. Talk to yourself and try and connect that activity with your inner sense of self. Why should I be doing that? It's so simple. We don't spend time on that. It's very, very simple. Just sitting down and talking to yourself. Why should I be doing it? How is it connected to my inner sense of self? As Enrique said, many times we just do it because we believe we have to do it. We are so much caught up in this have to, should to, must, it becomes a compulsion. And because it's a compulsion, it creates stress. And that stress is not pleasant. So I do it sometime and then I give up. But when I sit down and I work with internalizing that activity, connecting it with my inner sense of self, over a period of time, slowly, it becomes a part of me. Then it flows from my sense of self, then it becomes very, very automatic. Does it make sense? So this is the process of transformation. Now, spiritually, how it helps us. Because we know, from a spiritual perspective, the spiritual knowledge that we have, that we practice in the philosophy of Raj Yoga that we practice here at the Brahma Kumaris, we have a very clear model of the self. We say, what is the self? The soul. We say the soul, the inner self, the soul. The soul consists of some basic seven qualities, seven basic values: love, peace, happiness, bliss, power, knowledge, purity. Basic qualities. So we have a model, right? And you can of course add many other things to that. It's not restrictive, it's not a closed model, it's an open-ended model. So you can add, but basically, some inner things that are important to me. Now, do I even recognize them? That's the first question. Do I recognize purity, for example? Do I know what purity is? This is reflection. Because unless and until I understand the very depth of that value, I won't be able to use it much.
It's not just recognizing what purity is, but to recognize that I
exactly,
have that.
Exactly. You're spot on. Bang on. You should be giving this talk. It's not just about recognizing what purity is, but recognizing that that is a part of me. I have it. It's my value. When I work from that space, then I start internalizing. And same thing with love. Yeah, love is my value, blah, blah, blah. Am I practicing it? What is love? If someone gets nasty at me, I'm getting angry. Where is the love? Where is the love? Am I practicing my value? I'm not. I'm losing my autonomy. That person is controlling me. I'm not being driven by my sense of self. I'm driven from this space. You're nice to me, I feel good about myself. I get an ego kick. My hunger is satisfied. You're not nice to me, I get angry at you because you're not allowing me to satisfy my hunger. I'm working from this space. It's not coming from my inner sense of self. Obviously, there will be problems there. So working at this level of transformation is what we speak about. We internalize. In this process of internalizing, I transform. I transform that which would be external in the beginning, but I make it mine, and I make it mine on my own terms, on the terms of my own values. This is the process. So when we say self, now self-determination makes sense?
Yeah.
Self-determination is acts that are emerging from my inner sense of self. But I have to work on them. Because many things I start doing, because of external circumstances. But then can I make them mine? And then when I make them mine, I am being self-determined. Any questions here? Anything you would like to ask? Say something.
It was beautiful the way that you put it, that you have to sit down and talk. Like, how important is the dialogue when we are doing
yes.
all the
extremely important. And that's why we say in meditation, Raja Yoga meditation is not about emptying the mind. It's not about emptying the mind. It's not about removing thoughts. It's about filling your mind with the right thoughts. There's a big difference. It's not about going into emptiness. It's about going into fullness. And that means I have to consciously reflect on these values. Make sure I'm experiencing these values and I'm using these values in my actions. This is the process of reflection that you spoke about. Conscious reflection. And so when we sit down, talking to ourselves, you know, I would give you a simple homework. Here, Mahavira. You take one activity that you're finding resistance towards, that is important for you, but you're finding some resistance to. You're not able to engage in it properly. Take up that one activity and work for 10 minutes every day, just 10 minutes, religiously, 10 minutes for the next 3 weeks, 21 days. Put it in your diary, 21 days, one activity that you're finding resistance towards. Sit down, either in the morning, fix a time for it. 10-15 minutes. Fix a time for it. Sit down. Go into deep meditation. Connect yourself to yourself as a soul. Connect to the Supreme. And ask yourself, so why am I facing the resistance? Why is the activity important for me? Ask yourself that question. Why is the activity important for me? What are the values that are reflected in that activity? Second question. What are the values reflected in that activity? Thirdly, are these values mine? Do I have these values within me? Fourth question, how do I know I have these values within me? How do I prove that to myself, that these values are there within me? Reflect on your life. Reflect on your experiences. How do I prove that these values are there? I have to convince myself that these are my values. And when I can do that, then engage in the activity. Try this out. It should work. And then please let me know. Because we have anyway 3 weeks now to the next talk. I think so. The next talk is on 10th November, isn't it? 10th November. So that is actually around 3 weeks. Right? 3 weeks. Fantastic. Perfect. So we come back and we'll speak about that. Because the next talk will be on what? Gratitude and forgiveness. Right? But before that, we can speak a little bit about this exercise of integrating. Integrating an action that I am unable to commit to properly from my heart because I have not done the work of identifying with it. Can I identify with that, connect it to my inner sense of self, connect it to my inner values? You could use the basic values of the soul that we speak about if you want, or you could use some other values, like value expressions if you want. You know, love, peace, happiness, bliss, purity, power.
Can you just begin one question?
The four.
I think even I've forgotten them. But I'll try and remember them now. Okay, so the first question is, why do I want to do this activity? What are the values reflected in this activity?
The first was why.
Why do I want to do it? Sorry, why is it important? Yeah, why do I want to do this? Why is it important for me?
Before
I get evicted. Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's going to be four H's, I think.
Yeah, something like that. Before. And then the second one is, what was that? What are the values? What are the values reflected in this activity? That's the second one. The third one was Woden.
Oui.
Yes. No, not Woden. The third one was, how do I know?
That is Woden.
Okay. So how do I know that these values are a part of me? Right?
That's only three.
That's three. And the fourth one was, how do I know? How do I convince myself? What is the proof that I have? It's an extension of the third question. What is the proof that I have of these values being a part of me? I have to convince myself. And so in this way, So what was that? First was before, well, and what then? There you go. Great. Okay. Yes. Shall we? Yeah. Final, and then we have some meditation. Yes. Dump it! If you don't find any relationship, perhaps you should not be doing that at all. Simple.
Yeah.
Many things we discover that are not really, really that important. We think they're very, very important. And if I'm not doing them for the right reasons, which means reasons of my inner self, perhaps it's not really worth doing them. Unless I can make them come from this space. So, for example, my company wants me to bribe people. Now I'm sitting and thinking about what are the values behind this? It won't work, right? It just won't work there, right? So obviously, for some activities, it will just not work. Especially if they don't really carry much value. I can fool myself into believing, oh, for the larger good, I have to bribe. But yeah, yes.
No, just I once was in a course and 100 people, and that really makes me think about how people is in this world. We had to go around for 20 minutes and shake hands and say why we were there.
Yeah.
And everybody but one in 20 minutes to shake hands said, well, I'm not good enough for this world. And I was surprised, because that means that if I look around here, almost everybody here, just an example, but one should say, well, I'm not good enough.
Mm.
And that makes me think that that sometimes I can really go that way and think that even people is behaving like idiots. I can think that deep inside them, they're not good enough. They think about themselves, they're not good enough.
They are good enough, but they think about themselves.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And it's a very interesting point, because this is also transformation. Many a times, I carry the feeling inside me that I'm not good enough, and that's what leads to compulsions.
Yeah.
Compulsions, you know, obsessions, because I'm not good enough. If I have compulsions, that means I have some feeling of not being good enough. Am I aware of that? If I'm not aware of that, I can't transform it. And I have to first be aware, and I also have to be aware that, but I am good enough inside, deep inside I am that. I'm not, and I am, and I have to transform this.
But that could take 20, 30 years.
You don't have to, you can take 30 months. Or maybe even 30 days. Let's meditate.
Oh, why should I met you 30 years ago then?
Let's have a quick meditation before we wind up for today. Okay. I allow myself to relax, settle down. I let the body and the mind settle down, letting go of all thoughts of the past, all apprehensions, anxieties, plans of the future. I let go of all excitement. Settle down. And I move inwards. Going deep within myself, I experience my entire existence. Concentrating. Concentrating into a point of light. A sparkling star. Shining in the center of the brain. My inner self, the eternal spirit, a being of peace and love.
as my existence concentrates into this infinite white. I experience this physical world of matter disappear. This physical body disappear from my awareness. Until all that remains is light. And I see myself in a world of light. And I see myself in the presence of God, the light of all lights. Soul with deep spiritual strength. I feel free. Just a point of light, sparkling in the presence of the Supreme. And holding on to this light and this deep silence, I allow myself to return gently back to this world of matter, back to this body, this costume of mine. I once again take my place in the center of the brain, looking out through these eyes, listening through these ears. Spreading the light of life throughout this brain and body. At peace with myself. At peace with the world. I am.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.